Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, regular host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that's been helping people with cancer to learn about and utilise integrative medicine to help them through and beyond their illness for the last 15 years. The last two Yes to Life shows have consisted of samplers from each of the sessions of the two weekends of our recent online conference, Your Life and Cancer 2020. I'm delighted to say that the event was attended by some oncologists, and one of these, the Chief Medical Officer of Genesis Care, Dr. Penny Kekeyoglu, was kind enough to say some very complimentary things about the conference on social media. So I invited her to come on the show and explore changing attitudes towards lifestyle and complementary medicine and the way forward for oncology in the UK. Hi Penny, absolute pleasure to have you on the Yes to Life show. I've been looking forward to today enormously. We've not spoken before, but you attended our recent online conference, Your Life and Cancer 2020, following which you posted some very supportive comment on the social media, simultaneously asking your colleagues to consider if they're looking at their patients' needs in a holistic way and if there's more that they could do. So thank you very much for that, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Robin, very much. I thoroughly enjoyed the two weekend events that you organised, bringing together patient experts and also specialists talking about integrative medicine and integrative oncology. I was very impressed by the high caliber of the speakers and the content, which I very much believe in, and hence my post later on to encourage my fellow colleagues to consider holistic medicine.
Excellent, excellent. So I definitely want to hear more about your thinking on that. But first, I wondered if you mind telling us a bit about yourself. Oncology is a highly demanding profession. You're in a top position. What drew you to medicine and to oncology in particular? And what do you attribute your success in this field to?
Sure. So my name is Penny Kekeyoglu. I am a consultant clinical oncologist in Coventry at the University Hospital Coventry in Warwickshire. And I specialise currently in breast cancer. I decided to become a doctor and go to medicine because I wanted to become an oncologist to help cancer patients have a better life, and also work with researchers to be able to offer new therapies to beat cancer. Mm. So I wanted early on to become an oncologist, and I'm very, very proud that I've managed to achieve that. And work in one of the biggest university hospitals in the country. In terms of integrative oncology, I think it's an aspect that I have learned through my other part of my role, which is a chief medical officer at Genesis Care UK, a private oncology provider, where we offer integrative oncology and conventional treatment within the same location of treatments.
Mm-hmm. And this early interest you had in oncology, is this through a personal experience, or what drew you to it?
My interest came from a family event, and I lost my brother quite early on in his life when he was a teenager by a rare form of cancer. And the learning points from then for me as a young child was the lack of information, and that families with people with cancer, especially children, receive in terms of what is available, what support is out there, and how can the patient have a good quality of life even in a terminal stage. And that pushed me really to read about oncology and have the passion to practice it as a lifetime job, really, which I see it not as a job, but as part of who I am. And my patients belong to my extended family, really.
Mm. So maybe the last part of that question of mine about how you've been so successful has to do with that aspect of your relationship with your patients.
Yes, I think so. I owe my success really to my patients that have helped and encouraged me to continue doing what I do, and also the people that I work with. You know, cancer and oncology is a multidisciplinary specialty, and I work with nurses, with other types of clinicians, with other healthcare professionals, and that is also very, very important. And the role of allied health professionals other than doctors in the management of cancer patients.
So you mentioned you work both in private medicine and in the NHS. Well, I'm often contrasting and comparing the strengths and the weaknesses of like the US healthcare system and our NHS. Different things seem possible under each, and they each have their own strengths and weaknesses. So there you are working with both public and private models of care. What would you say about the merits of each system?
It's a great privilege to work in the public and private sector. And as you say, Robin, they both complement patient care. And a brilliant example is during the COVID-19 pandemic, when the independent sector stepped in to help with elective cancer operations so that patients who needed an operation to remove the cancer could actually do it when the NHS focused on treating COVID-19 patients. So you can see immediately the collaboration between the public and the private sector and how one complements the other.
Interesting. Okay, so just as in the US, there's kind of more integration in their insurance-based system, presumably because patients like it and it's cost-effective. So in the UK, private healthcare is ahead on integration. Can you tell us what's on offer? You mentioned that Genesis has a much more integrative approach. What's on offer there?
Sure. We know that only 40% of oncology providers in the world have got integrative medicine within the same roof, so combining complementary and mainstream treatments. And this is what Genesis Care does really well. So in UK, for example, we have got 14 centres which are specialising in oncology care. So we offer radiotherapy, chemotherapy and diagnostic services. And in the same clinic or centre, we have got exercise medicine facilities and also well-being consultants who can offer patients complementary therapies such as relaxation, acupuncture, reflexology, nutritional advice. So patients come in for treatment, but they also feel that they are receiving holistic treatments as well. And they leave the centre having a great experience, and it doesn't feel like such a painful event to have treatment for cancer anymore. It feels like they have experienced an unpleasant event, but with they were left with a very good mental health in one way, and also physical health by becoming stronger through exercise.
Right. So very important. This is a little taste of taking things into their own hands and contributing towards their own well-being.
Absolutely. And if you take the feedback from our patients, they talk about having that sense of control and also the power to be able to do something for themselves and not being always very dependent on what the clinical doctor says. And diet, nutrition and lifestyle, it is under the control of those patients. And actually having a focus and seeing consistent improvement in their health, losing weight, increasing their muscle mass, feeling much better, having a better quality of life, enables them to go through difficult treatments such as chemotherapy, but also have better clinical outcomes long term.
It's brilliant. So, you know, it's not to say there aren't complementary therapies on offer at many NHS oncology units, but it's kind of noteworthy that they're quite circumscribed in their offerings. And as far as I'm aware, they're all charitable initiatives of one kind or another, i.e. the NHS themselves hasn't provided these. They've been set up usually by some cancer patient or parent or whatever. And have ended up with a unit at the hospital, which is providing some of those kind of services. I wonder, is it a source of frustration to you not to be able to offer your NHS patients more?
I think, as you say, the NHS is specialising in a lot of areas, and oncology is not the main specialty. There are other acute specialties as well.
Right.
So we need to be mindful of that. So it's very natural that NHS can only offer those services through collaboration. And if you see what Genesis Care has done, we have also collaborated with Pennybron UK, which is one of the biggest cancer charities,
yes,
to be able to offer to our patients those complementary and well-being therapies. So I think you can only do that and achieve the best outcome through collaboration. And as you say, NHS does have the facilities, but not in the same roof. We could refer patients to several charities around Coventry, for example, that run forums and exercise groups. But the benefit of Genesis Care is that they contain all those services in the same place for ease of the patients, really.
Mm, that's very important, isn't it? Because if it requires too much effort for a patient who's very ill, they're challenged on many levels, psychologically, emotionally and physically, to go around searching out services from all around the area, that's quite a big ask, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. And I think what's missing overall, in UK at least, is some sort of collection of those services in a website where patients can actually go and find what they need and where to find what they need. Because different patients may have different needs throughout the cancer journey. Some patients may need more exercise to get the strength, and some patients need nutrition, some patients need psychological advice. So where do they get all that information, and where can they go out and get them from?
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of suggestions there for everyone who's listening is that, our own website has a directory which has quite a lot of people who specialise in supporting people with cancer in a lot of different fields. Also, social prescribing is coming up fast these days, and that's available through a GP to actually point people towards local services to them. So both those may be of use to people. It was fantastic you were at our event. I'm not sure how many sessions you're able to attend, but were there any particular highlights that stood out for you?
Yes, there were. And I really like the message that came out from those events. And in particular, we are not talking about replacing mainstream medicine or oncology with alternative medicine.
No.
We are talking about integrating the two. And this is an important message, really. So I think for me, it's very important that we champion this as oncologists, the integrative oncology aspect. And we have certain champions in the country who can actually make that movement grow and make it more standard practice. When a consultant sees a patient in clinic or in the multidisciplinary team, how do we ensure that integrative oncology is part of the consultation?
Mm.
And patients can get a full care, a holistic care, as we call it. This is my vision. This is what I want to see going forwards. And it was discussed, multiple ideas were thrown during the events, including, undergraduates, targeting the undergraduate curriculum, ensuring that research is done with prospective review of the patients that have undergone integrative oncology treatments, making sure that the outcomes are well recorded and they are published so that people can be more aware, clinicians and patients alike.
Mm. Well, a hugely important part of that is, as you say, somebody championing the cause, and otherwise it never becomes even an acceptable concept that people should do such a thing. And that's why I'm particularly pleased to be talking to you today, because you're in an influential position and you're right behind this concept. So you will be creating the space for other people to say, hey, well, maybe this is not such a bad idea. which, you know, it really needs to happen as soon as possible. The 2 weekends were targeted at slightly different groups of people. The first one, people who are brand new to integrative medicine. And I'm pleased to say that a significant proportion of the people who came were exactly in that position. Although, of course, the quality of the speakers attracted lots of other people as well who just wanted to hear the speakers. But I think a third of them were actually new to integrative medicine, and we kept it pointed firmly towards them and didn't get carried away with complexity. But it's quite a steep learning curve for people when they first come across the possibility of helping themselves in all these ways. And we were at pains to point out to people, you don't have to know it all today. You know, you can find your way, and there are ways to be helped to do that as well. But were there any kind of particular messages from that first weekend that you picked up on?
I think, yes. I mean, I like very much the fact that there is some evidence behind integrative oncology.
Yeah.
And that's important for clinicians who always base their practice on clinical evidence.
Mm.
And a lot of people do not know that actually there have been small studies. For example, if we take mistletoe therapy in pancreatic cancer, you know, there have been studies, that there are currently studies ongoing showing that quality of life has significantly improved versus best supportive care in that very difficult to treat cancers. So it's important to understand and learn and, you know, be open-minded as clinicians, and actually there is some evidence behind those treatments. They are not just experimental treatments. And very importantly is to listen to the voice of the patient. And even if the evidence is not extensive, if the patient outcomes are better and if the patient quality of life improves, I think that's a fantastic outcome.
Mm.
And if we can offer that for the patients, that's a, you know, we should be very, very proud and happy to do that. So my message from the first weekend was about keeping it simple and looking at what we can change now. For example, what I have changed over the last few months since working very closely with Penny Braun is that I've started thinking about how to replenish for example, essential vitamins after chemotherapy treatments for patients. So I offer a vitamin D test for every patient before they go into a patient-initiated follow-up.
Fantastic.
To ensure that their vitamin D levels are adequate. Because we know that low vitamin D levels can increase the risk of breast cancer. And that's a very simple thing that we can do, all of us.
Yeah, I think that is so important what you just said, that many of the things we're looking at in and of themselves are tiny. They're not expensive, they're not even time-consuming often, but they can all add up to a big difference. You know, surprisingly small things can add up to a big difference when a few of them are put together. So great to hear you say that. And again, it's kind of, it's the business of being open-minded is what you were talking about, which is so important that when a patient comes up with saying, well, I'm interested in doing mistletoe treatment. Well, as you say, there is some evidence for mistletoe treatment, and there's plenty of evidence that it's not dangerous and not likely to be harmful. So to be supportive of that person doing the mistletoe treatment is hugely important for that person, that they actually feel, yeah, I'm doing this with the blessing of my oncologist, you know, as opposed to I'm going to do it behind their back sort of thing anyway, or I'm going to be put off, one or the other. So I think what you say is right, is that the if you've got a situation where you're looking at something where the evidence is there to some extent and there's not a risk to the patient, you know that it's safe, I think the endorsement is so important for the general morale and, again, feeling that they're doing something to help themselves for these patients.
Absolutely agree. And for the patient to feel that they have the support from the oncologist means a lot. We offer, you know, don't see that, but actually if the patient feels that they're doing something without the oncologist approving it, that increases the anxiety. And,
right.
and actually, it's not fair for patients. So if they've chosen to follow integrative medicine, oncology, I think we should be supporting. And as you say, as long as what they want to do does not cause harm. So that's where our clinical role should play, rather than blocking them pursuing those treatments.
Right, right. And it's not, I don't think anybody's expecting oncologists to become experts in some area they're not. You know, obviously they've got massive expertise in what they do, and that's plenty enough to be going on with. But, you know, it's good if there's, you know, there are experts out there in lots of these other approaches. But I feel like oncologists, what would be a great use to them would be somewhere they could go to where they could quite quickly find out, yes, there's a reasonable amount of evidence, and yes, it's safe, you know, without having to study for hours to do that. I don't know if there is such a thing at the moment, but it feels like we could do with it.
I think we can do it. You're absolutely right. And again, it's working in collaboration, is knowing who the right people to approach are. And obviously those experts in those two events that you have organized, Robin, demonstrate that there are a lot of people out there with fantastic knowledge and experience on those therapies that we as oncologists can draw knowledge from.
Right, right, yeah. So, you know, this is where the dialogue's so important. You know, one of the things that we've been aware of ever since we started Yes to Life is that, you know, the most important thing, the thing that's the hardest to get to happen is dialogue, actually. And that when there's dialogue, there's understanding, there's ground to meet on is created. And all of this is a benefit to patients rather than being kind of in the firing line between two groups of people who are sort of arguing at arm's length, you know, without ever talking to each other. And that's a very difficult situation indeed for patients to be in.
Yes, and I think with your help, obviously, the dialogue has already started. So I'm very, very positive that we can do more in the future collectively.
Fantastic. Really good. The second weekend, we sort of put the foot on the gas a little bit and we started producing material that was more aimed at people who'd already embraced integrative medicine and they were really wanting to find out some more. So it was a bit more involved, a bit more complex. I have to say that plenty of the people who are new to integrative medicine did come along, even though we warned them that it was going to be like that. And I think they were able to take it in the spirit of, right, well, all this is doing is showing me that the field is quite wide and there's lots of avenues I could pursue in the future sometime, then that's okay. As long as it didn't scare too many of them off, that's always the concern with the complexities and things. But it was interesting. Again, I think the audience was very appreciative. There was lots of great dialogue and the experts, as you say, came up with the goods every time. I wasn't disappointed in any of the speakers. Was there anybody who stood out for you in that second weekend?
I really love the nutrigenomic talk. And I never realized how much theory and science is behind the foods that we eat. And I definitely, my target after that weekend was to go and read more. But I think that's an area which I find particularly interesting on, you know, and it's very individual again. And if we talk about personalized treatments for patients, we should be looking at what is the right nutritional balance for our patients and how can we enable them with the right support and signposting to the right people to get the right balance in their lives. And we heard stories from patients with advanced cancer that they live years because they follow, together with the mainstream treatments, and certain lifestyle which
right.
they enjoy, have control of, and they feel good about it.
Yeah, no, it was a very interesting session. It's not something I know a huge amount about either, but I'm wanting to find out more. I thought there would be some good subject matter for another radio show sometime. But fascinating what's going on. I mean, it's quite cutting edge, but it does point to the way, the huge differential in the success of treating one person and treating another, doesn't it? Or a diet with one person or another, you know, any of these things, it begins to show you how individual we actually are, and that a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't do it.
It definitely doesn't do it. It's not just how our bodies individually work, but also, you know, we are predisposed to certain conditions. So we have already existing conditions. So some people have got diabetes, for example, and nutrition has to be, you know, a very important aspect of their lives, but also quite specific.
Right.
So we cannot advise, we cannot give the same advice for every patient. We have to look at the patient holistically. Again, a collaboration between the clinician who knows about those conditions and what patients need, and the integrative clinicians will bring the right outcome for the patient.
So I think it's interesting that, in a way, conventional medicine, it's focused its efforts largely on killing and removing cancer, with many notable successes. And on the other side, complementary and lifestyle medicine has, in the main, been looking to support health and well-being. And so it's got sort of vast insights into the effects of nutrition and sleep and exercise, etc. And to me, these look like two sides of the same coin. And, you know, some people have dismissed one side entirely and they've got away with it. But I suspect that many, many more actually suffer hugely as a consequence of dismissing one of the two sides of that coin. I wondered how you see it.
I absolutely agree. These are mainstream oncology care and the integrative complementary and care for oncology. They go hand in hand. And cancer, we know that there are specific treatments that have been approved and evidence-based, that we use them as clinicians and we use them with confidence. But we know that complementary therapies can also make those mainstream treatments more effective. So combining the two, we can actually have a better outcome than we thought we would. And
right.
There is evidence, for example, for traditional Chinese medicine when combined with chemotherapy in lung cancer, mm-hmm. it has been shown that it increases overall survival versus chemotherapy alone. So there is also evidence of a synergistic effect. And that is very, very important. Because as clinicians, we cannot ignore that. And we always strive to give the patients the best possible outcomes. And therefore, we should be able to consider all available treatments and offer the choice to the patients. Because we often, again, forget the choice of the patient is very important.
Right, right.
I personally have seen a lot of patients, for example, who went with one side, either alternative medicine mm-hmm. or with mainstream alone. And that's a choice, but we have a duty as clinicians to offer those choices and both of them to the patient.
Right. Well, I love to hear that. It's fantastic. And I think, you know, some of the greatest things in integrative medicine do, I feel, come from these kind of synergistic effects, which more and more of them are being uncovered these days, between some kind of simple natural approach. Maybe it's a supplement or something, or maybe it's heat or oxygen or whatever, combined with absolutely standard of care changes the outcome, quite substantially. And this is an amazing thing when, you know, a simple intervention like that can make such a difference to a treatment that we already have and we know how to do it and everything. I think that's the area with, if you like, the biggest potential for improving the results of cancer treatment is just by these simple combinations. And I would love to see those happening. It needs, as you're saying, though, some kind of open-mindedness that hasn't existed before, because, you know, medicinal mushrooms, for example, that get used out in the East routinely in hospitals with chemotherapy because of what it does to people's immune system. There's no consideration of using mushrooms in a hospital here. It's just not like we don't do that, you know. So something needs to change quite fundamentally for that to be able to happen, even though they're very cheap, they're very safe, and they are very effective too.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think it will come, Robin, and we are seeing more and more clinicians coming together to implement and advocate for those treatments. So I think it will come, but it's coming in slowly.
Right.
And the key here is also the data collection. So, you know, following up those patients who have had integrative oncology and reporting on those outcomes, I think that is what's going to change and drive and the culture change for clinicians to see over time that, yes, indeed, those patients who follow integrative oncology have indeed better outcomes.
Yeah.
So I think any change in health policy or what we do has to be driven by those patient outcomes and data.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, well, let's roll on. Let's get that data. So recent years, they've seen new developments in hospital treatments. I'm just interested, from your experience, which of these are you most excited about and do you believe are bringing the most benefit to people with cancer? That's both in the short term and in the longer term.
Yeah, sure. I will speak about radiotherapy in specific.
Okay.
I think radiotherapy is a treatment that can actually cure cancer. And it's a second treatment after surgery that can treat cancer with just on its own, with no surgery at all.
Okay.
So, but over the years, radiotherapy has changed and has evolved. And for example, when a few months ago we gave 3 weeks or 4 weeks of radiotherapy to breast cancer patients, now we reduced the number of fractures into 5. And because we found a new regime that can actually give the equivalent outcomes to patients over a week versus
right.
4 weeks, which is a fantastic change.
It
because
is.
For patients to have their treatment completed in 1 week, that makes a huge difference to their lives. And also with the newest techniques that we use in radiotherapy, we also see a lot fewer side effects. So I can see in every single tumor type, radiotherapy has evolved immensely. And not just the technique, but also the number of fractions that we treat, which has improved survival, improved quality of life, and can also be used for patients who have cancer that has metastasized. And we see excellent outcomes long term in those patients receiving radiotherapy.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. You surprised me there, coming in with a very old treatment that you think has improved a lot. I was expecting you to start talking about targeted therapies and things. Could you just tell me a couple of things about the radiotherapy? So I assume that the patients are receiving a lower dose of radiation overall. Is that true?
The patients receive the same dose overall, but it has become more targeted. And going into your point about targeted therapies,
yes.
Radiotherapy has become more targeted. And that is the key. The dose hasn't reduced. In fact, it has increased. And that's the key. So we know which tumors are most likely to respond to radiotherapy.
Yeah.
And we try to escalate that dose. We try to escalate that using the right machines and the right technique. So limiting the dose to the normal tissues and focusing the radiation to the tumor using techniques such as breath hold, so deep inspiration breath hold in breast cancer, or abdominal compression, and simple techniques that the patients can also control themselves by holding the breath, for example.
Oh.
And we can achieve better outcomes with lower toxicity.
Mm. That's really interesting to hear. Okay, is there anything else that's a recent development that you feel is making a lot of difference for patients?
Yes, of course. There's a new, well, it's not new anymore, but there's a new generation of chemotherapies called immunotherapies. And we have seen immunotherapies making a huge difference for melanoma cancer patients, for example. And we are increasingly using immunotherapy for other tumor types, such as lung cancer and breast cancer as well, and bladder cancer. And what they do is basically they potentiate your own immune system to be able to fight cancer. And we have seen some long-lasting outcomes in patients living for years with metastatic melanoma, for example, and they have changed completely the biology of the disease. So I think that category of drugs I would consider as revolutionary.
Right. Okay, well, certainly you hear a lot about it, and you hear some good success stories as well, so it's nice to have you confirm that. Okay, exercise, funnily enough, it's sort of come in from left field. It sort of appeared from nowhere as something that might be good for people with cancer. They were all told to stay in their beds for weeks before. But suddenly it was like, come on out of there, you've got to do some exercise. In fact, you could do it while you're having your chemo. Very different thing. But as I say, it's come in from left field in a way. It wasn't there within complementary medicine. It wasn't there in orthodox medicine either. It just appeared from nowhere in a way, through research, I suppose. And as a result, it's made great inroads in a way. It's still not common enough in the UK that oncologists are recommending, I feel, to people, considering how great the benefits are. But it's certainly it's had far less resistance than, say, ideas about nutrition, which are so... You know, there's a huge gap still between a functional medicine practitioner's advice for nutrition and one you might receive at the hospital. So it's quite interesting, that thing about it appearing in that way, I find. I feel like it's been a bit of a Trojan horse in some way, and it's allowed a lifestyle approach into mainstream medicine much more easily because there was not any kind of history to it. Is that your view of it? How do you see it?
It's interesting your points about exercise, because one of the main complaints of patients during chemotherapy and radiotherapy, and actually after that, in their survival stage, is fatigue. Yes. And there is science behind exercise. And exercise, there's evidence that it combats fatigue.
Yes.
And it's something that everyone can do without... any expense, actually. They just need to come out of the house and do 30 minutes of walking, brisk walking, six times a week. And that is the recommendation. It's as simple as that. And the effects of that on its own are huge, not just to speeding up metabolism, reducing fat, which we know it can cause cancer, but also releasing those important hormones, which makes you feel good, makes you feel stronger and more positive, in combination also with contact with the nature. So it's caused so many good effects, exercise. And people are worried now at the pandemic stage that they can't do any of that because they can't socialize. But actually, 30 minutes of outdoors walking in a path that you know, and you can do that with another person from your household, this is therapeutic.
Yeah, it is fantastic, isn't it? It's completely free, and you can do it yourself. I mean, it's really an excellent addition, you know, because it's not just a minor difference it makes, as you say. It's really quite can have a major impact in many, many areas of your treatment and outcome. So, fantastic. So, from what you're saying earlier, you're clearly optimistic that integration in the UK is not only possible, it's going to happen. Am I right?
I am very optimistic. And I think those events that you organise, Robin, we need to have more of those.
And we will.
We need to invite more mainstream clinicians to participate.
Right.
And, you know, network with other people who are experts and learn from them. Because I think there is a knowledge gap, and hence why oncologists in particular, they haven't taken on that practice, or they haven't, you know, they're still not offering it to their patients. There is a knowledge gap which we need to fill in, and that's our duty.
Right. Well, hopefully you can help us getting your colleagues along to our next event. We'd love that, of course. Where, you know, it's been fantastic to have some at this event, but of course we want lots. And because we want to have the biggest impact possible. And I know that the audience, of course, is largely people with cancer or their relatives or their supporters. And they would desperately love their oncologist to understand why they want to do these things, and that actually it's for real, it can make a real difference. And it would be hugely important to them to have the support of their oncologist in saying, yep, that sounds like a good idea. So, I really hope you're right. Of course, we're pushing all the time for this change to happen in the UK. Can't come soon enough as far as we're concerned. So really appreciate having your support for what we're doing. It means an awful lot to us. And hopefully we see big change very soon.
So, that's excellent.
Yeah.
Good. Well, Paul, I'm happy to support you in the future as well.
Yeah, so. That's so great.
Thank you, Robin. And well done for everything that you do. I'm very, very happy to have met you. And definitely we need to grow that that movement.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Penny.
Have a good day. Bye.
And you. Bye-bye. It's such a joy to speak to a top expert about the issues at the heart of our mission at Yes to Life, and to be met with such open-minded enthusiasm and the desire to create new ground to improve the outcomes and experience of those going through cancer treatment. This is exactly what we've been working for all these years, and an incredible outcome from Your Life and Cancer 2020. I'm looking forward enormously to working with Dr. Kekeyoglu more and to meeting more of her colleagues who are open to integration. Yes to Life has an innovative fundraiser in December, an online dinner. It costs just £10 to join in, and there's going to be spectacular entertainment, stars, prizes and loads of fun, all in a great cause. It's on the 10th of December, and you can book your place on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Just click events. Thanks so much for listening today. I hope you found it interesting and will want to join me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.